Okay, we're going to start this week as Parshas Vayishlach. The Netziv raises a number of themes, some of which we've seen before, so I kind of highlighted those and we'll get to them. And some of there's one theme which is very important to recognize, that it's based on what happened last week. When Yaakov had his dream, so on the one hand, God made a promise to Yaakov. On the other hand, Yaakov makes a condition about what's going to happen when he gets back. So I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I didn't want to skip, because when I prepare a lot like I did tonight, we don't usually get to the end. So I want to start actually with Rachel's death. With his just his comments. It's not a lot, but it starts on the bottom of page 6, and in the Chumash, it's towards the end of chapter 35. So it's going to be the bottom of page 168. Okay. So it's a 188. So since it's a survey of the Parsha, I think if we go a little out of order, that's fine. Besides, Ein Muktam Chabar Torah, right? So we can do that. Okay. So one of the important themes, which, as I said, we're going to get to, is Yaakov's trip to Beit El. Beit El. He comes there after the Shechem incident, and at the beginning of chapter 35, and after the death of Devorah, which is assumed to be related to the death of his mother Rivka, which is not mentioned in the Torah, but the Devorah's death is mentioned, we see Rachel having difficulty giving birth. So in Pasuk Tazayin, Vayisu mi beis el, Vayihi od kivras ha'aretz lavo yefurasa, Vatel Rachel vatikash b'letetav. So they're traveling from Beis El, and they haven't yet come to Ephraz, and Rachel, it says, gives birth. Now, by the way, the whole order of the way things are presented here is a little confusing, and I know that in past years we've looked at it because it's not clear. For example, Vatelid Rachel, what does that mean? She gave birth. Vatikash b'lidata, and she had difficulty giving birth. Okay, well, I thought she just gave birth already. So, which one is it? And so, when she had difficulty when she was giving birth, the midwife said to her, "Al tiri, don't be afraid. This is also a son for you." So, as her soul was leaving because she, what does mesa mean?
She died.
Because she died. Well, mesa means died, right?
Yeah.
Or does it mean mesa that she's dying? I don't know, okay. Vatikra Shemo Benoni, she calls him Benoni, which we're not going to translate yet. Viaviv Karlo Binyamin, and his father calls him Binyamin. Vatamas Rachel, now it says she dies. Okay, Vatamas Rachel, she dies. Vatikaver B'derech Efrasi Yibeslachim, and Yaakov puts a matzeva on her grave. Okay, so fine. So let's take a look. I just wanted to see his approach. Some of this we've seen in past years, but he owed, bottom page 6, under those dots, Paga b'Yakov midas hadin, v'nenash b'ishto ha'uvalo, k'gufo b'shas ha'sakana. Okay, so what does that mean? Yaakov midas hadin, the God's character trait of judgment, came against Yaakov, and he was punished. So in other words, Rachel's death, the Netziv is saying, is a punishment to Yaakov. I don't want to say fault, okay? It's a punishment to Yaakov, that he loses his beloved wife, Ha'ahuvalo kegufo, who is beloved like his own body, v'shasa sakana, in a time of danger. I'm not sure that. I don't know that means. Okay, we're going to get to that. Okay, vateled Rachel. So he says that when it says vateled Rachel, which I mentioned before, said and she gave birth. He says odlo yaloda mama. She had not yet actually given birth. Ela achazua chevle leda, but she's having contractions. Okay, there's a Gemara in Shabbos which discusses at what point do you, I guess, open the grave, right? Okay, unless it's a euphemism for birth, but I don't think it is. Anyway, the end of this difficulty that she experienced was with the birth itself. And at that moment, that's when she died, okay, when she was born, when the baby was born. So wait, then how did she have time to name him? She was afraid that maybe the child was going to die too. Right, as It happens. Now, I mean, we do, unfortunately, even today, we hear about women who die giving birth. It does happen, even in modern America. And it's a tragedy, of course, every time. But often enough, when the woman dies, especially if she's in the hospital, they can save the baby. It is because of all the different methods that they have of getting babies out. But once upon a time, if that were to happen, they didn't really know. So if the woman dies, it was assumed that the baby wasn't gonna survive, and unless they knew to cut the woman open and take the baby out. But in any case, that's the understanding. The Gemara talks about the Mubarashim Esav Lad Me Inspiration, that if a pregnant woman would die, then the baby would die. Al Kain Vatomer Lam Yaledes Al Tirei. So the midwife was saying to her, Al Tirei, like, don't be afraid, Shemesav, like, don't think that the baby died. The baby is going to survive. Okay, meaning that to whatever degree she was along in the birthing process, the midwife clearly knew that this baby was, maybe he was partway out, I don't know, according to the view of the Netziv. We saw last year, I think it was a different perspective, that Rachel may have lived a little longer after the baby, after Binyamin was born, but obviously that's not the Netziv perspective. We saw that phrase last week, right? That this one will also be a stick for your hand and a shovel for your grave. Okay, I don't really know how he's going to be a shovel for your grave, considering that your grave is going to be buried very soon. But skip to the end of the line. Zimun and Demikre Dehi Maisa Bereisha, because sometimes it happens that she dies first. Okay. Omishun Devkar Okar. I skipped the brackets. Omishun Devkar Okar Havlad Kishitas Hatosus Benita Sham. Maybe the baby had already somehow emerged. Okay. Ben Oni. Yesh Pesesh Neimash Maos. What does Ben Oni mean? Anybody? Before you look ahead, what does Ben Oni mean?
We've heard different.
Affliction. So that's a possibility. I would sooner agree with you 100% if Oni was spelled with an aleph, ayin rather. Okay? But he says, Yesh Mishnei Mashmaos. One is Rashi, which says, Lashon Sa'ari. But the other one is, like Yaakov says about Reuben, Kochi Bereshis Oni. On means strength. On means strength. So, Shuavlad Lakach Kocha V'Ona Sheshavakalo, which is a fascinating idea. It's like Harry Potter. Okay? That he took his mother's strength, which she gave over to him. Okay, that's right. She says, "All my strength is gone, and I want to give it to my son." I actually did a bris this year for a baby, and the parents named him On Lee. They're Israeli, On Lee, which means my strength. But they didn't want him to be. They didn't want people to think his name was Only. So they had to write it differently.
He's the boy that lived.
Right, Harry Potter. Okay, so Oni. Oh,
but she had to live a certain amount because she was able to determine that it was a boy. The Mialetis.
Maybe that's because of the way she was carrying. Come on. I'm sorry.
Okay. Say that it was chicken for each birth. The reason that she had so much trouble.
It could be.
Therefore, she was able to see
that. All right, so certainly a possibility. Okay, the main things that I wanted to show you were the part about when she may have died, and the two explanations that he gives, rather than just resorting to one when it comes to the name of Binyamin. And of course, following that second explanation, maybe Yaakov chose to call him Binyamin. Because which really means the same thing as Ben Oni, meaning strength, right? Binyamin means the son of the right hand. The right hand is supposed to represent strength, and maybe Yaakov didn't want the double nuance, the passive. Like maybe he didn't want Rashi's explanation, and so he said, you know what? It's painful enough that Rachel died. Let's just stick with the interpretation, which is a blessing.
Calling her Ben Oni.
Okay, maybe it was too painful for him, and that's another possibility.
What Yaakov did that Rachel had to die?
Yeah, so we're going to get there. We're getting there right now. Okay, so now we have to go back to the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. So if you go back in the Chumash, was it 144? 144? No, to last week's Parsha.
Oh, last week.
The beginning of last week's Parsha.
Okay.
All right. So So God says to Yaakov, while Yaakov is sleeping, he makes him a promise about how many his children are going to be. And he says, I'm going to give you this land. Look at the last pasuk on page 144. God says to him, I'm going to be with you and to guard over you and all that you go. And I'm going to return you to this land. Because I will not abandon you until I have done for you what I promised. Okay, in other words, so he's essentially promising Yaakov, I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to take care of your children. Okay, that's what, if you read the whole thing, that's what he says. So then Yaakov wakes up, and Yaakov makes a vow. And Yaakov says, where is it? Pasuk Chaf. He says, Vaydar Yaakov Neder Elimor. Yaakov makes a vow. Yeah, Elohim Adi, if God is with me, or when God is with me, depending on how you want to translate the word in, but anyway, Ushamarani, and he watches over me, but Derech Hazer Asher Anochi Alech, on this path that I'm going, he gives me food to eat, clothing to wear, v'shavti b'shalom al beis avi, and when I come back in peace to my father's house, v'yah Hashem li l'elokim, and Hashem is to me a God, again, whether I think I mentioned last week, that is that part of the condition or whatever, so I'm going to make this stone into a matzeva, I'm going to turn it into the one that I made into a matzeva is going to be a house of God, and whatever you have given me, I'm going to give a tenth to you. Okay? Where is Yaakov? So our understanding is, it's a machlokas where Yaakov is. Is he at Har Moriah? Is he at Beit El? Where is he? So, but the point is that he ends up fulfilling his vow when he goes back to Beit El. Okay? That's the understanding that is pretty clear in the text. So what does it mean? When is he supposed to fulfill this vow that he makes in the beginning of Parshas Vayetzeh? When he comes back to the land, right? Because when Yaakov has the dream, he's, you know, angels up and angels down. And when he comes back at the end of the Parsha, he's at Machanaim, and what does he see? Angels. So that's basically a way of saying, okay, mission accomplished, you know, now time to fulfill the vow at Beis El. So the Netziv's theme that he raises and just keeps on going back to is that because Yaakov keeps on delaying going to Beit El,
trouble comes
to him. Okay? And what's the trouble that comes to him?
Rachel dying,
Dina.
Dina.
Okay? And I mean, the encounter with Esav doesn't go badly, but even the nerve-wracking introduction to that, you know, is a piece and a component to that.
Okay, so then the question that you would ask is, why isn't he going back?
Yes, that is a good question, and I don't know how to answer. That's a kasha namaisa. What is Yaakov delayed for? Well, I mean, he gives one answer, which we're going to see. Okay, and the truth is that maybe it's a problematic, you know, if in fact what the Netziv suggests is the reason why Yaakov delays going back, you know, you can start asking a question. I mean, look, this is not such a crazy theme that Mefarshim come up with. Right? I mean, you know, there's that crazy story in Parsha Shmos after the burning bush, when Moshe, on his way back to Egypt, he stops at an hotel and something happens. It's a crazy story, 3 psukim of just impossible to understand. Okay, but some are of the view that what happens there is that God is punishing Moshe for not having circumcised his kid, because he delays it. Because that's the circumcision that Tzipora does there is the solution to the problem, whatever the problem was. Again, it's very unclear. But what's only clear is that there was a problem, and the circumcision stopped a problem. That's the only thing that's clear there. Okay, so, but if it's in fact true that is what happens, that Moshe is called to task for not having done something which he shouldn't have delayed, so you could see how God operates in such a fashion. It's troubling, but you'll see how Yaakov carries the theme of understanding the promise that God has made to him, with respect to watching over you and your children, and how he plays it out in the handlings and the dealings which he undergoes. So take a look. Now we're going to go back to the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. Okay? So the Parsha begins, page 170. Vayishlach Yaakov melachim lefanav el Esav achiv arzah seir sedei Edom. So Yaakov sends messengers to Esav towards the land of Seir and sedei Edom, because that's where Esav supposedly lived. But we're going to see in a second that Esav thinks that Esav did not live there, but that was a land which Esav was attached to, even though he primarily lived closer to his parents, who at this stage of the game were still alive. And he gives them this message about where he's been, where he's lived, and he has all this stuff. And the Netziv's point in understanding these psukim is that Yaakov was trying to just give a message to Esav saying, look, I'm coming, I'm going to meet you, and I have all this stuff, and when I meet you, I'm going to share it with you. Okay? That changes when Yaakov finds out that Esav is coming towards him with the 400 men. And then Yaakov says, oh, okay, maybe I better appease him now, and I'll send him the animals. That was not part of the original plan. Take a look at the. We're going to skip around a little bit because I want to just get through a few points.
Okay.
So in the first comment that you have in Pasuk Dalet, so he says that he mentions actually that point that he did not send things at first because he wanted to give it to him face to face. But why did he not send things to him? Go to the middle of the third line. V'lo shalach ad heina. He didn't give it to him yet. Mishum kodem sheba machanayim lo yarei klal. Because before he came to Machanayim, which is the end of Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov wasn't afraid at all. Why wasn't he afraid at all? Shehari adayin lo niskayim avtachas HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'ashiv v'sichal adam azos. When he gets to Machanayim, that's when he knows, okay, I'm back. God has fulfilled his promise to me. He's fulfilled his promise to me. And so now that I have been brought back in peace, God's not watching over me anymore. And if God's not watching over me anymore, now I need to be worried about Esav once again. Avol Misheba Le'Eber Yarden. Now I'm in the Holy Land. God said, I will not abandon you until I've done what I said, which is to bring you back. Okay, so that's point number one. That Yaakov is now in the land and he needs to be concerned. So the second paragraph there, today, though, I just mentioned briefly. Basically, he has a similar notion to what we saw with Abraham and Lot, that the land couldn't hold both of them together. Esav was primarily living in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Seir, today, though, was south of the Dead Sea, in that arena over there, and maybe a little east as well. So he sent messages to there, and I always wondered. I mean, because it shocked me that I didn't even realize or notice this. But how did Esav know that Yaakov was coming? And the answer is that Yaakov sent a message to Esav and said, "I'm coming." And Esav said, "Oh, okay." Now there are different views as to where Esav was bandying about with his 400 men and what that all means. But the idea seems to be that Yaakov sends this message. And as soon as Esav heard, oh, Yaakov's back in town, he's nearby, all right, let's go, man, giddy up, let's go. And that could very well be what in fact caused Esav to come. So, V'echar Arata, Yaakov says that I've been delayed until now, and then it says, L'fayescha, Mishim Shaloya B'yadi B'ma L'kabel Panecha B'mincha. That the whole reason why I was delayed in Laban's house, because the first, remember, how Yaakov was in Laban's house for how many years? 20 years, okay? Yep. The first 14 years, what does Yaakov own? Nothing. He works to marry first one wife, and then he works again to pay for marrying a second wife, and then the next 6 years he builds up his fortune. So, until he actually leaves, he doesn't really feel comfortable to say, "Okay, I can actually appease Esav in some way," which would actually work. Okay, now the next thing which we have here is the Vayachatz Esav. So after Yaakov hears that there are 400 men, turn the page on the Chumash. Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. So Yaakov is afraid, and he's very concerned. Now, there are different interpretations of what that, so we're not going to go into what the different interpretations are. But the next thing which he does is, Vayachat Setsa'am. He divides his nation, so he divides his nation, in other words, the people who are with him, and the sheep and the cattle and the camels into two camps. Okay, so why is he dividing them into two camps?
One should survive.
Okay, that one should survive, right? Maybe that's a possibility. But you know what Yaakov's not worried about? He's not worried about one surviving. Why not? Because he has a promise. God says, I will not abandon you. Right? Your children are going to survive. That's the promise. That's the promise. So what's he worried about? Look at the end of the third line. Ella Barur. Haya etzlo, and I'm in Vayachatz Esav towards the end of the first page. El barur, the big paragraph towards the end of the first page. El barur, etzlo, shelo yarog lo asav lo achanim banav. He knew that he nor his children were going to die. Shari Kvar, who moved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Yichlehu Vizaro. He knew, God promised him, that you and your children are going to make it. Shehema Kamohu Biatzmo, that's the way it's going to be. Look, skip to the middle of the next line at the comma. Ella. Yarei Minachasav Avadim Ushfachos. He was worried for his belongings, for his servants, and for his maids. Uvitfila Shel Yaakov Mavuor Shayarigam. He was also afraid that the women are going to be killed. Why? Because as soon as Yaakov has his nation, he doesn't, you know, I mean, technically speaking, for the promise to be fulfilled, he doesn't need to have his wives. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that his wives should die, chalila v'chas. Okay? But the point is that Yaakov is looking at things from that perspective. I had a promise, and have I fulfilled my vow? And the answer is, the promise, yes. Have I fulfilled my vow? Not yet. Okay? And that is something which continues to hang over Yaakov's head. And it's his view of looking at this entire story. And when I say this entire story, I mean this whole parsha. And it's a theme which keeps cropping up.
Yeah, it doesn't say that he split the kids.
Okay, correct. That's okay.
Cool.
Okay, well, yeah. So, and what lifleta means, we discussed in the past. Lifleta does not mean to survive. Lifleta means to save. Right? We saw that in Yosef. Yosef says, I'm here. Right, I have the food and I can help you guys survive. That's what lefleta means. Anyway, okay, we continue. Pasuk Yud. So, Vayomer Yaakov Elohei Avi Avraham Elohei Avi Yitzchak. So, if you remember last week, we had the whole thing about Avraham and Yitzchak, and what does it mean to be Elohei Avi Avraham Elohei Avi Yitzchak. So, you see that both words, Elohei and Avi, are mentioned both for Avraham and Yitzchak. So, I brought that to show you. Avram is Hamyuchel Hagana. We saw that Avram is a prayer for protection. And what's Yitzchak? Anyone remember? Parnasa. Asher Yikot Filaso Bishvil Hamachanesh Avadim Ushfachos Bishvil Anashim Asherim Parnasa Adam. Okay, he says that the prayer utilizing Yitzchak's name is his concern over his possessions. His possessions meaning his animals, his servants, his maids, and his women. And that is the parnasa of the person. And he says, that's Midah Shel Yitzchak. And I mentioned that just to show you how the Netziv is being consistent in mentioning that theme. The idea of Yitzchak representing parnasa is something which we've basically seen in every parsha since the Akedah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. The next thing, again, I'm not reading the entire portions of each passage because I just want to get to the thrust of what he's telling us. So Yaakov in Pasuk Gidal says, "Katonti mikola chasadim mikola emes asher asisa sadecha." I have become little or humbled from all the kindnesses and all the truth that you have done for your servant. And he goes on to explain. And the Netziv notes that it's Unkelos who translates the word emes to be. I want to get the punctuation right. Tavvan, tes vez vav nun. What does that word mean?
Goodness. Good.
What? So he says velo katargumo. So actually, I didn't look this word up. Maybe I should have. But bekol makom ukshot, right? In other words, when we think MS means truth. So he says that the Unkelos mentions this idea of tavvan, which I didn't look up. You mind grabbing
it?
Tavavan ukshot. So what does tavavan mean?
Tavavan is
it's goodness.
Which
oh, so that, okay. So then, if it means, that's what I assume that it means. I'm sorry. That's the whole point, right? Tav means good. You don't have to look it up. Tav means good. It's from the word tov. So if that's the case, so he has here that MS means, according to Unkelos, goodness, and according to the right, in other words, every other place when he comes across the word emes, he translates it to mean truth. Here, he translates it to mean good. So, well, hold on a second. But isn't that what chasadim means? So, if you go to the last two lines, he explains here that this is a tov shehu nitzchi, and that's what's called emes. In other words, it's a goodness which is, I mean, eternal. And so what is Yaakov saying? Look at the last two lines. Remember Yaakov, that you've done two good things with me. Hainu chasadim shua osher. One is all the chasadim, which is for wealth. Umikola emes, shebecharo lios menu umizaro uma nevcheres lios nitzchi. He says, what's the emes here? It's a different type of goodness. It's basically that we're the chosen people. What does the chosen people mean? It means that we are your children, loyal and vayed, netzach nitzachim, That this is the goodness, which is the truth, that is that Yaakov and his children are God's chosen people. And you have to understand and, of course, understand and recognize and realize that chosenness doesn't mean better. Chosenness means have a mission. Chosenness means that you are, I mean, as God says to Moshe, tell Paro, Komar Hashem, Bani Bechori Yisrael, my child, my firstborn is Israel. What does that mean? It means that I have other children as well. All the people of the world are God's children. But the firstborn is the one who has the job. You're the one who, you got to be the leader of the family. You have to take on the inheritance, whatever it is you have to do. But it doesn't mean better. It just means that you're the firstborn, and the firstborn has responsibilities. Okay. All right, so Pasuk Yidalid, Yaakov, Vayelon Shem Balayla Hahu, Vayikach Menavah B'Yadav Mincha Le'Esav Achiv. So Mincha, we heard Rabbi Black mention this Shabbos, and Mincha means gift. Mincha means gift, and we see it here. He was talking about how Tfilas Mincha may have something to do with the idea of Mincha being a gift. So Yaakov takes aside things which are Minhabah B'Yadav, right, which come to his hand. So what is Minhabah B'Yadav? So look at the last two lines. He says, because he mentions that he can give things which belong to him, but not the avadim u'shfachos, right? Those things, the servants and the maids, he did not give to him. B'zeu min habab yado sheba me'elav, something which comes of its own accord, which means that it does not have in any way free will. V'hu k'mo b'yado, haynu she'en lam das, things which have no knowledge or understanding. V'lo avadim u'shfachos she'esh lam das, but he did not give to Esav the servants and the maids. And one of the reasons which is explained here, I don't remember if I gave it to you, but it has to do with just the plight of people who are part of, there's people who are part of the household of Yaakov and understand the way Yaakov's morals and ethics work, and that's something which they're used to. It would be inappropriate for Yaakov to put them in a totally different environment, such as the household of Esav. And we're not even going to assume anything about Esav, except that it's different, and the fact that it's different is something which is not.
Doesn't that mean small?
What? Whatever. I mean, I don't want to start assuming and presuming. Okay, but that's why I put it the way that I put it. Because, I mean, I can argue Yaakov doesn't have mitzvahs either. I mean, even despite the love on Garti, I mean, we can make that argument, or we could not make that argument.
You can't give an Eved Ivri a maidservant that's a Kananis, right? Is what are different opinions?
No, an Eved Ivri, no. You absolutely can.
You could give him a Kananis?
Yeah. That's the whole point, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
He's going to go off the derech.
He's in your house. No, he doesn't take her when he leaves. She belongs to the Baal. Okay, she belongs to the Adon. The Balabas. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now again, getting back to the same. One second. Okay. So Pasuk Chafes just mentions that he slept with the when he slept that night, he slept with his servants just to show them that he's with them. Okay. Anyway, Chaf Gimel. Now we're up to the part where they cross over the Yabok. Okay. Pasuk Gimel. Vayakam balayla hu vayikach eshteina shavestei shivchosav eschar esar yiladav vayavor es mavar yabok. So he takes his wives, his shivchos, which are presumably Bilhah and Zilpah, and his children, and he crosses over the yabok. He takes them, he crosses them over the river, vayaver etz asher lo, and then he brings over his stuff. Vayivaser Yaakov levado. Now I think what many of us are familiar with why Yaakov was left behind. He had a few things left over. So the question that the Nitziv addresses is, why didn't he take his stuff first? In other words, if this was a safe space in the meantime, safety in numbers, if he has to go back to get his stuff, and he's leaving his family on the other side of the river after he has crossed them over, so he's leaving them very vulnerable in the sense that he's not, he's the general, he's the one who's going to be in the front line, so that would be something of concern. So why is it not a concern? Again, go back to our theme. Yeah. Yaakov's not worried about
His kids.
Okay.
It's a promise. Yeah.
Okay. Look at the third line. Shemei Olam Lo Yarei Al Hayiladim Pasuk of Gimel. And that's why, again, at the end of the line, Mishmachi Hevir Tchila Hayiladim, and that's why he brought them over first. So now there's a little bit of a concern. If you go to the next line, you need to tell him, he brought over the mothers with the children because he thought that they would be saved in the merit of their kids. But he only took 11. Why? Who's missing, I should say? Not Binyamin.
Dina.
Okay? Below is Dina. You know why? Because Dina is not part of the making of a nation. So what's promised is the children that are going to continue the nation. Is there a Shevet Dina?
Maybe there should be.
There should be. There should be. There should be. As a matter of fact, it's funny. I went to a camp. Some of you know, but I went to a camp that they would name the all the bunks after the Shvatim. So they had a Yosef and a Ephraim and a Manasseh. We'll leave that for what that is. They also had a bunk Yaakov and a bunk Yisrael. But that's it. So like 14, 15 bunks. Okay. The girls who are the children, the daughters of the rabbis in the camp, they did their own little day camp thing, and they called themselves Bunk Dina. Okay. Anyway, okay. So in other words, once he realized that Esav wasn't really nearby, then he realized he could do whatever. Again, the main thing that I wanted to point out was that theme that he keeps on going, that he's not worried about his children, and that's it's really a little monkey wrench in the way that we often, you know, view this parsha. Oh, Yaakov's divided. Like, how did he divide them up? Did he put, like, you know, six kids in one and six kids in... I mean, Binyamin wasn't born. So, but he had 12 kids. Six in one, and like, and which wives? He put Rachel and Leah in this one. Like, maybe he want... You know, like, how did he divide it? And the answer is, no, that's not how it was divided. It doesn't matter, because in the end of the day, when Esav meets him, there's only one camp. So that whole plan was scrapped anyway. Okay. Perek Lamed Gimel. Okay, paragraph. Vayisa Yaakov Einav Vayar Vihine Esav Bav Imar Abraham Yosish. Then it just says, how did Yaakov know that it was Esav? It was from a distance, right? Vayisa Einav. The answer is because he saw a guy with 400 men. He said, it's got to be Esav. Okay, that's the first one there. Okay, now Pasuk Dalid Vayaratz Esav Lekraso. Yaakov bows to Esav 7 times, and then Pasuk Dalid Vayaratz Esav Lekraso Vayichabekehu Vayipol Al Tzavara Vayishakehu Vayivku. What does Vayichabekehu mean?
Hug, embrace.
Translated precisely.
Chabak.
And he hugged him. What does Vayishakehu mean? And he kissed him. What does Vayivku mean? And they cry. Okay, that's the point that the Nitziv focuses on. Veloksi Vayichabek lo Vayishak lo, which might imply that each one is doing it. It says, it seems that there's only one doing it. Why? Yaakov had humbled himself before Esav enough. And he didn't think, while Esav can come over and give him a hug and a kiss, he didn't think that it was appropriate to do that back. And he compares this to Shmuel and Shaul. That Shmuel gives a kiss to Shaul, but Shaul does not do it back. And that is an interesting question. Who is the student and who's the master at that point in time? Shmuel is the Navi, but Shaul is the king. Right? So, or maybe Shaul is not yet the king. Because that's when Shmuel anoints him. Okay. Anyway, so turn to the next page. Shnehem Bachu, they both cried. So even though he couldn't give him a hug and a kiss, but the crying, that emotion he allowed himself. Why? Because when you cry, who's involved in the crying?
Just you.
Right? It's your own doing. You don't have to reach out to somebody. You don't have to do an action towards somebody else in order to cry. So for whatever reason, the Yaakov was reserved with reference to his connection to Esav, the crying is something which he was able to do. And look at the message which the Netziv gives us. End of that first line on page 3. When Esav's descendants or spiritual descendants find a state of purity to recognize something wonderful about Bnei Israel as it should be, then we too can wake up and say, oh, Esav is our brother. So Rebbe and Antoninus had a very nice relationship, and there are other examples of that as well. Okay, you look in Yad Vashem. I don't know if people were so close like Esav and like in the good times of Esav and Yaakov, but obviously there were people who risked their lives to save Jews. I've heard it said once. I'm going to give a little, you know, a little plus. I can also give a little. It's a, you know, Yad Vashem, they plant trees for all the righteous Gentiles. And I've heard it said, for all the trees that Yad Vashem has planted, Israel is not going to become an exporter of lumber. Okay, so we should remember that. Okay. One point in Pasuk Hey, Esav asks Yaakov, who are all these people that are with you? And Yaakov says that they're the my children, Asher Hanan Elohim Esavdecha. I'm sorry, Vayaris Hanashim Esavdim. He saw the women and the children. So why does he say Asher Hanan and not Asher, you know, something in Putin? Hanan sounds to be a singular and it's also masculine. Okay? And so the Nitziv says that he wanted Esav to understand that the women here were his wives because they were not very old. Okay, we talked a little bit last week about how old Rachel and Leah were when Yaakov showed up. When Yaakov showed up, he was 77. How old were Rachel and Leah? A lot younger. Okay, so he wanted Esav to understand, yeah, the women here are not my daughters. They are my wives. Sharei lo ayu zukenos kamo Yaakov. At this point in time, it's 20 plus years later. So Yaakov's 97. So we don't know anything about what he looked like. We don't know anything about his agility seems to be, you know, as strong as anything as ever. That's not the concern, but certainly I'm sure he looked older than his wives to whatever. Okay. All right. So then we don't have to go through all. Oh, actually, I didn't give you most of it. So Esav is very magnanimous, and he invites Yaakov to join the family and to come to Seir. And Yaakov essentially refuses. There in Pasuk Yudalad, the Nitziv says, he says, you know, Eini Kedai, I'm not worthy to go to get more honor from Esav. Look at the second line in Pasuk Yudalad in the Nitziv. Again, I'm on page 3. Kichol od libo b'melech ha-shmir satsom v'gidol banim. He says, look, I got so much on my plate. I got to take care of my sheep. I got to take care of my animals, my children. I got to raise children. I don't have the time or the ability to come to change my life and start to go to where you are. Pasuk de Zayin, so Esav goes, Vayasha Bayamu Esav Lidarko Seira. So he says, the Nitziv says that Esav went Lidarko Berogez Meat. Right, he had just been very generous to Yaakov. Come, live with me, I'll give you a place, right? Like, my kids, your kids, the cousins, they can grow up together. And Yaakov refuses. So what is Esav feeling? He feels a little hurt. So he's a little angry. There was no kiss at the departure. I mean, listen, how much time did they spend talking? I don't know how long this conversation lasted. In the pasuk, it looks like it was no more than 10 minutes, right? But Esav tried to be generous, and it was all rebuffed. Okay, so now after that, what happens is Yaakov nasa sukosa. Yaakov goes to Sukkos, even Lobayis, and he builds for himself a house. When the Mekneh was nasa Sukkos, and he builds these huts for his animals. And he calls the place Sukkos. Now, what does it take to build a bais? A house?
A lot of stuff.
You got to get a contractor, right? You got to order the supplies.
Permits.
You got to pay. Oh, permits. Forget it, right? Permits. You have to deal with all the plumbing. You got to make sure you got the drywall, right? All the cement. I mean, it's crazy to build a house, especially in, you know, wherever he was. In Sukkos. I mean, I heard the city there is impossible. I mean, forget it, the permitting. So Yaakov builds a house, and for his, not an ohel. What's an ohel?
Tent.
You pitch a tent. How long does it take to put up a tent? Right? If it's a non-permanent structure, you don't even need a permit. Right? Maybe you do. I don't know. Okay, you don't need a, so he doesn't do that. He builds a house. And for his animals, sukkos. Okay, now I don't know what huts for animals are. Are they barns? What are they? You know, I don't know. So look what he says here. Perish Chazal Megillah David Zayin Jasi Yaakov Sukkos Shano Mechza. Yaakov was in Sukkos for a year and a half. A year and a half. What's the problem, folks? Where is Yaakov supposed to go?
Israel.
Beis El. He says, you can't say that he really made Sukkos for his animal. Some don't need that. What do they need? They need a geder. They need a fence. He made huts for his family, the Shnei Mosakites, for the years of the summer. That it's because of his animals and the care that he needed to take for his animals. He didn't make it to his father. He didn't make it to Beis El. And what happens in the interim? He knew that they needed to rest. So can you blame him? Right, it's like Moshe going to Egypt. So he pushes off the bris. Can you blame him? So, you know, it's a very difficult, I mean, theologically, to me, it's very difficult to say, oh, you know, he had a very good reason. He had a good excuse. But what happens as a result? And it seems to point all this stuff as a punishment, as a repercussion for Yaakov not fulfilling the vow. Dina, it's the very next story. And then after Dina, we find out about the death of Rivka. So he never gets to see his mother again. Okay? And then Rachel dies.
You don't actually see the death of Rivka.
Right. We do see that. Right. So one of the interesting things with Rivka, this is the source for the idea of how old Rivka actually is at the time of her marriage, is there's a I don't remember if it's a Gemara or if it's a Midrash which says that Rivka lived to be the same age as Kehas. Okay, and there are a few people there are other pairs of people that the Gemara talks about that they were the same age. But Kehas lived to be 133. So if Yaakov is 99 at this point in time, or by the time he gets to Beis El, and Rivka is 133 at this time when she dies, that implies that how old was she when Yaakov was born? 34. Subtract 20 years. That's how you get the idea that she was 14 at the time that Yitzchak married her. Okay? Obviously that goes against Rashi. Understood. Okay,
where does Rashi get three?
Because he puts together the Akeda, the birth of Rivka, and Sarah's death.
127.
Okay,
127
equals he's 37, and Rivka's born at that time.
Yeah.
Born, and they get married when he's 40. That's what they get. That's the source of that. All right, you can pick whichever one. I'm not getting into that. Okay, but the point being that. So they assume Devorah's death is attached, and we're actually going to see that very soon. Okay, when we get to it. Okay, so what's the point that we get? That the delay is a cause for some of his problems. Okay, and he mentions the same thing in the next pasuk, in pasuk Yichas. The Nitziv says that Yaakov had stopped in a few places, Har Gilad, Machanaim, Sukkos. And why did he stop in these places? Wherever he stopped was really Ela Bishvil HaMikneh, Bevar Adem Eretz Mikneh, right?
So much sensitivity.
So he didn't have to stop so much. He didn't have to worry in other places. Oh, that's fascinating. I actually didn't even realize that now, right? What's Eber HaYarden? You remember what Reuven and Gad say to Moshe? They say, right, this is a great place for animals. We have. So there, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it. Now he comes into Eretz Canaan. And now he has to worry. That's fascinating.
That's
okay. Anyway, okay. So the next one is so now he gets to Shechem area, and the pasuk says regarding his arrival in Shechem that Vayichan is Pnei Ir, page 180, the end of pasuk Yiches. Vayichan. What does Vayichan mean? So we assume it means it comes from the word Machaneh. So that's one interpretation. The Nitziv actually gives two interpretations, right? One is that the first one is that he encamped outside. But look at the second one, Uberaba, and we actually saw this last year in the Orachaim. Uberaba Isa Hanan es Hapanim Sheba'ir Shalach Lahem Doronos. That what he did was he tried to charm the occupants of the city by sending them packages, saying, "Hey, everybody, I'm your neighbor. Yaakov got some nice kids, you know. Maybe you got some friends for us, whatever it may be." And that is what Vayichan means from the word chain. Okay, then he
Find
tried
grace.
To charm them.
Tried
to charm them. Okay, now this next one is going to blow your mind. What happens? Pasuk Yitas. Vayichan es chalkas dasher not Hashem olom yabin echamor vishchem v'mei aksita. He purchases this property. Vayatzev sham mizbeach vayikrolo el Elohe Israel. So he builds this mizbeach. And he calls out God, the God of Israel. Okay?
Okay.
Anything wrong with that? With what Yaakov does here? Looks very nice, right?
He calls himself Kel?
Is that the issue? He probably didn't call himself the God of Israel. But look what the Nitziv says. The Midrash Isa Karli Atzmo El. So first of all, the Midrash does suggest that. Okay, that he called himself. Okay. But the Nitziv says that's ridiculous. Okay, he didn't do that. The problem is that he called himself Yisrael. Who named him Yisrael?
A Malach
named him. Okay. And in Beit El, God calls him Yisrael.
And he's not in Beit El.
And he has not yet come to Beit El. So in other words, what had happened up until now was, you know, this Malach gave him a bracha that your name should be Yisrael. What does that mean? Is your name Yisrael? Has he been referred to as Yisrael in the Torah up until this point?
No.
Other than that, the answer is no. He's only been Yaakov. After this parsha, goes back and forth. And there are explanations given for that. But look what the Nitzim says. Mishumachi nikra kadosh baruch hu el Elohi Yisrael. That's why he refers to God as El Elohi Yisrael, God, the God of Israel. Hainu shespalel f'im esbech, Elohi Avram, Elohi Yitzchak, Elohi Yisrael. Hold on a second. You can't call him Elohi Yisrael yet. V'nen ashbil v'shvil zeb ma'asadina. For calling himself Yisrael, referring to God as the God of Israel. That's what the Midrash Rabba says. Hainu shavagav shamalo amal she'enikra Yisrael v'mikomokam odlo nikra m'kadosh baruch hu. Yeah, the angel gave him that bracha, but God did not affirm it. And therefore, not yet. You do not have the right to use that name.
Wow,
that's a little mind blowing.
That's crazy.
Okay, that's that. Crazy. That's crazy.
It's a big
now that goes that again. That goes into what I said is a very big theological question. You know, I mean, it's one thing to say that what happened with Dina, you know, it's Nebuch, it's a terrible story, and you know, Shechem is the low life, and Shechem the kid who does this, he's a low life, and it's just horrible and whatever. It's another thing to say that it's a punishment. It's another thing to say it's a punishment to Yaakov. And it's another thing to say it's a punishment to Yaakov for the two things that we've seen so far. Not going to Beit El and calling himself Yisrael. I mean,
that's...
how do you answer that? I don't have answers to these questions.
Where's the meaning of negative?
Right. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Now, there is a running theme, and I'm turning over the page to page 4. There's a running theme that Yaakov... Oh, so you'll see the little note that I put there, by the way, at the beginning of the chapter. Nara versus Yalda. So, you know, when we think about those two words, Yalda usually means the littler girl, and Nara means a slightly older girl. How old was Dina in the story? It's a good question. If Yaakov has not yet come to Beit El... Right, and Dina was born at the end of that. Remember, she's Leah's youngest kid. Okay, so Yaakov and Yaakov works the first 7 years, then marries Leah, and then a little while later Rachel, and then over the next 7 years, all the kids are born except for Binyamin. Okay, so that means that over the course of those 7 years, they're all born. So I mean, just do simple math. If Leah is not having twins, and there is a possibility that Zvulun. And Dina are twins because it says V'achar Yalda Bas. Okay, fine. So it doesn't matter. Zvulun and there was a pause between the birth of Yehuda and the birth of Yisachar. So the likelihood is that Dina was born at the end of that 7 years. I mean, there really
the
isn't another.
The second 7 years.
Yeah, the first 7 years nobody was born.
No one was born then.
Okay,
since 14.
So that first 7 years. Okay, and then Yaakov worked for 6 years, and now he's been traveling for 2 years maximum. By the time he gets back to Yitzchak, he hasn't gotten Yitzchak. How old is Dina?
8, 7.
8.
Next.
Not more. There is no way. She's not more than 8 years old. Okay, which of course makes the story ever so much more troubling. Okay, but I mean, that's the simple math. There's no getting around that.
But if you say that Rivka got married at 3, 8 is an old woman.
Right, exactly. I'm not saying Dina's not an old maid. Chalil
v'chaz.
No. She's a Nara or a Yalda. Rivka is referred to as a Nara.
Wow.
And a Yalda. She's actually referred to as both. And an Alma also. Ayin Lamed. Anyway, but the point being that he goes back and forth, and it really depends on whose perspective we're looking at. Is it Shechem's perspective? Is it Yaakov's perspective? Is it the brother's perspective? And at what point in time? What's Shechem looking to get out of it? Okay, so that's something which I'll give you for homework if you're interested, just to pay attention to that, because it's something which the Nitziv draws out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now. Take a look at the top of page 4 in our booklet, but we'll just look at the pasuk. I found this to be interesting. He says vayishkav osav. Vayishkav osav means he lay with her. So, and what's vayyaneha? So is vayyaneha, is that bad or is that good? right? She'era. What?
Didn't he afflict?
Sounds bad, right? How do you spell She'er Ksus and Ona? How do you spell Ona?
Shin Aleph Rish.
Ona, is that with an ayin? Yeah, so the Vayana might not be bad. Okay, I mean, it could be Inui, it could be suffering, but it could also be, you know, that he did. And because what does the next thing say? So is he raping her or is he seducing her? When you talk to her heart, right, it could be that that he's convincing her this is the right place for her. So look what he says. Look at, skip to the middle of the line. Anytime it says shachav osa, osa means it's rape. Overatzon ksiv ima, to be with her. And we've actually seen this. This is a theme. Another theme that the Netziv has raised to us: the difference between im with an ayin and with somebody as alf tuf, right? Ito versus imo. So he's using it in the context of a sexual encounter. Is it rape or is it? Or is it desire, right? Which is assuming meaning on that with consent. In Lo Sheish Lzei is a drash v'achinami ksiv osa shaya ba'onis. So that's what it says here, that it was rape based on that word osa. Okay, now Yaakov, of course, I found this also fascinating because maybe I just didn't pay enough attention to this to the psukim in the past. Pasuk Hey. Okay, after Shechem says to his father, I want this girl. Kach li as hayalda hazos leisha. Right? You see that change? He spoke alev hanara, but now it's yalda. I want this yalda. So anyway, that's again for your homework with the Yaakov shama, kitimez dinavito, vanova us mikneo wasadeh. Yaakov heard. How did he hear? Did Shechem and Hamor come along yet? No. Rumor mill. Right? Yaakov had charmed people, so the word got back to him. From whom? We don't know. Yaakov heard. Okay? And the sons were out in the field. Ve'achirish Yaakov ad ba'am, and Yaakov was quiet. What do you mean Yaakov was quiet? Who's he going to talk to? There's nobody there. Ve'achirish Yaakov ad ba'am. So obviously the person who told him could hear a reaction, but Yaakov chooses to be silent. Look at that. They're coming to talk to him. Okay? Now again, Ito. The Netziv does make something about that. I don't think I gave it to you. Okay? But is Yaakov going to talk to them? No, because Echarish Yaakov. Ubnei Yaakov, bo v'nasadek isham'am. When they heard, how did they hear? Who did they hear from? Right? Rumor mill. It must be. Vayis atzavu, and they're very upset. Vayichalem ma'od. Kinev Allah, sabi Yisrael, lishkav es bas Yaakov. There's lishkav es, not lishkav im, right? Lishkav es. Vechein lo yaseh, they cannot happen. Vayidaber chamor itam. So chamor speaks to them. And he explains, your sister, Bevitachem, right, your daughter, give her to him as an isha, as a wife, and they give their whole pitch. Okay, take a look at the Netziv. Okay, Ve'acharish pasuk hey. So on the top of page 4, second entry. Ve'acharish sheyare litzok kishu be'atzmo. He was afraid to cry out when he was by himself. Had he heard before, in other words, had he heard that Dina had been kidnapped, okay, he would have gone straight in and to give up his life for her, because that's the halacha. Middle of the next line, he's either going to kill or he's going to be killed. But after she had already been raped, guess what? What's he going to accomplish? Deed's already been done. Kishu ba'atzma, by himself, you want to bring in an army and wipe out the town? That's one thing. But to go in yourself, shkoyach, you're not going to get anywhere. If Yaakov had played his card saying, my life is over, my kid's life has been destroyed, then Chamor and Shechem would have had the upper hand. But the fact that Yaakov controlled his emotions, wow, is what he's saying, that gave them the need to come over and talk to him. And say, all right, you know, let's negotiate, because you have demonstrated that you're a player. Was he a player, or did he just understand the score? Vayitzei chamor pasuk vav, bo el Yaakov, ad shalom bo achim. They came to Yaakov before the brothers came back. It tells us about the brothers and what they had been doing. They came to Yaakov first before the brothers had come back. Right? They saw him speaking very softly. And that's why they don't come out angry, and they don't come. Had there just been emotions flying, then it wouldn't have worked out the way that it was. They saw this is calm talk. Okay, we'll talk. And they went about. Now, again, there's what to be said about judging the Bnei Yaakov. When we looked at the Haksavya Kabbalah, okay, really was very eye-opening, in which he came down extremely harshly, of course, on Hamor and Shechem, but not only coming harshly on them, justifying every single step of the move of the brothers in terms of the way they spoke to Hamor and Shechem and the things which they presented to them and how all of the evil of Hamor and Shechem is clear in the things which they say, how they were only thinking about money, they wanted to be connected to Yaakov because of his money, and how they were very deceitful in the things which they said. They said, you know, we're going to take all of their daughters, all of their property is going to be ours, something which Yaakov's children never agreed to. Okay, take a look at the Pasuk Yud. Right? What does Pasuk Yud say? When Hamor is trying to sell this whole thing to Yaakov and the family, he says, what does V'itanu Teshevu mean? What's he not saying? V'imanu Teshevu. Take a look. Right? Stay with me. We'll do business together. It's not going to be so separate, but not so close either. Okay, that's again a theme which we've seen over and over again. Bimirma, the way the brothers speak back and they say, you know, you want to be like us, you got to be circumcised. He says that the idea, you know, they never thought that the people of Shechem would buy into this. Because what do they say to them? Right, remember, what do they say to them? You want to be Pasuk Tesvav. They say to them, Ach bezos neoz lechem im tiyu chamonu lihimo lechem kol zachar. Right, and the only way this can work is if you will be like us to circumcise all your males. Okay, so if you think that what they meant was that you're going to be like us in one aspect of your experience by saying that you're just going to be circumcised, just like we're circumcised, you totally missed the first point of the line. The line is im tiyu chamonu. You have to be like us. You have to take upon yourselves our way of life. You have to join our group and our family and our, right? Basically, you have to convert. And it must have been the Xavier Kabbalah who said that was their downfall. Okay, because the brothers knew they weren't real, they weren't sincere, it's very clear that they weren't. But everybody else saw they got circumcised and said, "You guys converted to Judaism.
You're on your own.
We hate you.
That's why no one came to the defense.
Right, that's exactly right. Okay.
Because they didn't care of Jews, though.
Correct.
That's exactly what I said.
Okay. So, yeah, the Nitziv does not mention that, but I just mentioned that again, even though we said it a couple years ago. Okay. Okay, take a look at Pasuk Zion. Pasuk Zion, they say, if you don't listen to circumcise, then we're going to take our daughter and we will go. Pasuk Zion, the Nitziv says, He Dina B'Yichud. Right, we're going to take our daughter, meaning Dina. And he's basically saying, or they're basically saying that she is like a daughter. Remember we saw about Yaakov before, what he should have done and could have done? That they can be Moser Nefesh Aleha. That from their perspective, the way that they were treating what has been done to her, vis-a-vis their relationship to her, she's like a daughter to them. Kedis of Midrash Ve'Evi'a Ramban, Parshas Vayira, that a person's job is to do whatever he can to protect his daughters or his wife. And they were saying to a man, and they said, we cannot give our daughter to a man that has an orla, v'lo amar la'am arel. They didn't say that we can't give our daughter to a nation that is uncircumcised. Mishum she'ulai lo yitratzu kol lihimol, because they recognized that the possibility is that the entire city would not agree. And then they would be fighting with them. But they did want to weaken Shechem, that he would not be a challenge to them in their taking Dina with strength. Right? Not everybody, if they see Yaakov's sons armed to the teeth, they're coming in just to get their daughter, yeah, Shechem might put up a fight. But everybody else is like, you know what? We're not getting involved. And Shechem indeed did do that. Okay, we are getting close to our time, so I just will show you one more thing. A lot of the things which I gave you in Perek Lamed Hey are the stuff about the experience in Beit El. I think I drove home enough the point about what Yaakov needed to achieve and the problem with how long it took him there. But there are other things which are nice about the experience with Yaakov and his children insofar as they're getting rid of the Elohei Anechara Asher B'Sochachem, for example. Yaakov says to them, get rid of the idols which you have, and they may have had some, but he says Asher B'Sochachem, not Asher B'Yadchem. The Nitziv says Asher B'Sochachem means things that you may have taken from the spoils of Shechem, which might not be in your hand, but maybe it's in that treasure chest you have over there. So, just get rid of it. That's one of the points which he mentions. But I do want to show one thing, because I thought this was a really instructive point regarding Shimon and Levi. So let's take a look at Pasuk Chaf Hei first, and then we'll look at the commentary, which you'll see on page 5, which is in bold. And with that, we will conclude for today, okay? Pasuk Chaf Hei says that after the males have circumcised, and by the way, the Nitziv does not believe that all of the males of the town circumcised. He thinks that that a lot of people did, but not everybody, not the Avadim u'Shvachos in town. It wasn't the servants and the maids, it was the people who were closest to Hamor and Shechem who could buy into the pitch that they had given. Well, I guess it goes back to that point that they felt that it was the people who were loyal to Hamor and Shechem who might give a fight, but I think the nafkamina is regarding Asher Timu Achosam, who is considered to be blameworthy for what had happened to Dina, and so he thinks that those who were servants were not they didn't really have a say, so it wasn't an issue. Okay, anyway, so he says here. Okay, so without getting into what all those words mean, because there's a lot to be said about to explain, for example, what betach means and why they're referred to as achei dina. And okay, vayigu kol zachar, they killed all the males. Was it really all the males? What does that mean? Okay, but the Nitziv focuses on Shimon and Levi. Okay, and the fact that they're called Shnei Bnei Yaakov. You know, we don't need, if you're going to tell us that it was Shimon and Levi, most of us are pretty good at least very, very, very elementary math. Hey, Shimon and Levi, how many are they? Anybody? Two. So you don't need to say Shnei Bnei Yaakov if you're identifying them. We know. You just say Shimon and Levi, or Bnei Yaakov, Shimon and Levi. The sons of Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, they went in. Shnei? Teba Shnei is miutar, it's extra. Uvenadav and Aviu, right? Nadav and Aviu, they go in to bring the Torah. It doesn't say Vayichu Shnei Bnei Aaron. It says Vayichu Bnei Aaron, Nadav and Aviu. You don't need to say two of them. When you're telling us who they are by name, you don't need to give us a number. It's coming to teach us that even though they obviously were in cahoots in their overall general anger to destroy this city, they were in cahoots to put themselves at terrible risk. But nevertheless, they were two. Why? Because they had different thought processes bringing them to the same conclusion. And this is amazing. Hainu, shonim hayu b'das hamavir ha'eshazeh. They were very different in whatever knowledge brought them to burn this fire. One is coming to protect the honor of his father, right? Jealous for the honor of the house of his father. This is a strange fire. And the other one is coming to protect whose honor? Not Yaakov's honor, but the Rabbanu Shalom. It's a fire of God. Right, the fire of God, it's a good fire in the right time and in the right place. Okay, but otherwise, it can destroy. How many people in this world have been killed in the name of God?
Millions.
I mean, over the course of time, I'm sure hundreds of millions. Okay? So Yaakov criticized both of them. Who's the H of God? Who's the fire of God? Anybody want to take a guess? That's Levi. Who's the fire of Kina? That's Shimon. Okay, and so I just found it to be fascinating that two brothers could be doing what on the surface looks like the exact same thing, but because they're coming from such totally different mindsets, they represent two totally different things. And that's why Yaakov says, Shimon v'Levi achem klei chamas mecherosehem, but in his comments, you got to study it in detail, he's knocking Shimon, and he's knocking Levi. And that's why he says, achalkein b'Yaakov, afitzein b'Yisrael. Okay, you got to say, this like, because it, you know, each one in its own way could be good, it could be bad. But together, very dangerous, very dangerous. Because of the extreme to which it can be taken. And does Levi lose anything out of this? I mean, what does Levi become? Levi becomes the Machane, you know, the Machane Leviya, right? The family of Kohanim, it all comes from Levi. So, obviously, it can be channeled. And that's one of the most amazing things, where I'll just, you know, conclude at this point. When the Leviim are turned into Leviim, when the tribe of Levi are turned into Leviim, the Pasuk says, what does it say? Ve'aviru ta'ar al kol basaram. You have to put a razor over. But it doesn't say what to do with that razor. Okay, and it's not clear if they're actually shaving all the hair on their body or not. So I found a perush, or maybe it's just my own interpretation from perush, which suggested that they're putting the razor over their body was their way of saying, we are no longer using the sword for anything which is violent. Because what was the last act of violence that Levi did?
Killed their brethren, right?
After
the eagle.
Correct, after the eagle. And that's the last time. That's the last time. But why do they do it? Because what were they doing it for? Bil Hashem Eli, Vayesvu Elav, Kol B'nei Levi. Now at that point in time, I guess it was appropriate. Moshe is giving instruction. And here, you know, we can argue, Yaakov didn't think it was appropriate, but they didn't lose anything over it, except to say that you can't hang out with Shimon anymore. That's the thing. So it's two different attitudes defining the Shimon and Levi in doing what they did. Okay.